You're listening to Song Exploder, where musicians take apart their songs and piece by piece tell the story of how they were made. I'm Hrishikesh Hirway. This episode is brought to you by Progressive, home of the Name Your Price tool. You say how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. It's easy to start a quote. Visit progressive.com to get started. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. Thanks to Indeed for sponsoring this episode. When it comes to hiring, don't go searching for the one. Just meet your match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Song Exploder listeners will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Song Exploder. Terms and conditions apply. This episode contains explicit language, but if you haven't seen Dune yet, there aren't any spoilers other than a very basic description of the premise of the movie, which I'm about to do now. The movie Dune was released on October 21st. It's the most recent adaptation of Frank Herbert's epic science fiction novel from 1965. The film was directed by Denis Villeneuve, and the score was written by Oscar-winning composer Hans Zimmer. Hans Zimmer has scored over 200 films, and he's been nominated for Oscars 11 times. He and Denis Villeneuve first worked together on the film Blade Runner 2049. Dune tells the story of the Atreides family as they relocate to the desert planet of Arrakis. When Hans Zimmer first started working on the music, he made what he calls a sketchbook, creating motifs and themes that might occur in the film. In this episode, he takes us through the first sketch that he did for Dune. It's called Paul's Dream.
My name is Hans Zimmer. I'm a film composer, and that was the job I had on Denis Villeneuve's Dune. We have a mutual friend, our editor, Joe Walker. Joe and I, we go back. We worked for the BBC in 1988. Joe actually started out as a composer, and I think that's an important part to know because he cuts in a very musical way. I remember Joe phoning up and going, "We are a little stuck on this project, Blade Runner 2049. And it was somewhere in that time that Denis said the words Dune to me. It's a lifetime story, really.
Hans Zimmer first read Dune when he was 13 years old.
And now if you go forward many, many years, Denis very quietly one evening asking me if I had ever heard of a book called Dune, and me sort of freaking out at him, going, "But you don't understand, when I was a teenager, da, 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 I make my own movie in my head." And one of the things I never did, I never watched the David Lynch version, I never watched the television version, because I had all these images burned into my head and I didn't want them to get extinguished or blunted or disturbed in any way. But knowing Denis, and Denis being a friend, it felt really safe to go on this adventure together. You know, usually you have discussions about ideas. You say, you know, "Here, I have this idea. What do you think?" But with Denis and me, what kept happening was that he would start a sentence and I could finish it. Or I would start a sentence and he could finish it. And it was like we had always heard and seen the movie on parallel tracks. And it wasn't ever about what's the creative approach to the music. It was more about what's the philosophical underpinning of the story. It's very much like a teenager dreaming, you know, where your dreams seem to have a profound meaning. And sometimes some of that meaning becomes the truth. But very often that meaning is just random noise and very unreliable narrator to your own life or even to your own subconscious. The piece I send you is the original demo. It's just called Paul's Dream. The sketchbook is how I go about figuring out what the architecture of the whole thing is. So the sketchbook gives you all the motifs, it gives you all the sounds, it gives you everything. And then from that, it becomes the score. For this track in particular, the idea partly was that it's a boy that dreams of the desert, and he's not at the desert yet. The first thing I put down was synth bell plonk, which has nothing to do with anything. It's just, you gotta start somewhere. Part of my conceptual thing is, I know what tempos Joe likes working at when he's editing. I know what tempos Denis likes because there's an unhurriedness about his filmmaking. There's a deep sense of letting you experience the image fully, letting you experience the performance fully. So nothing develops at like a lightning speed. So, you know, picking the tempo is partly knowing the people you're working with. The little quarter notes at the beginning and that low, you know, I don't know, that low droney thingy, they're safe places to start on.
To me, this is like a signature Hans Zimmer sound. Do you think of it that way?
Yeah, you know, and at the same time, every movie I make new ones, but they're not that different from each other. It's just, I love the low sort of Tibetan, oh, you know, it's like, look, I can sing it, you know, it's part of my register. I love the idea of that innocent little temple bell ringing at the top and then sort of these sort of monks at the bottom. I needed to go and find some familiar ground, you know, to calm myself down. Because here's the thing, this is an enormously ambitious project, making this movie, and sort of a childhood dream. So the last thing I said to Denis before he went off to shoot the movie, I just looked at him so sternly and I said, Denis, just one thing, don't fuck it up. But then he came back and it was the same thing. Now the responsibility had shifted onto my shoulders. One of the things that Denis and I agreed on was that even though the book seems on the surface to be about all these very masculine heroes, it's really the women that are the power that drive the story forward and that drive fate and destiny of everybody forward. So the score should be relying heavily on the female voice. You have Lisa Gerrard, you have Suzanne Waters, you have Edie Lehmann-Borica, and then the great Loire Kotler on lead vocal. And those are really the choir. If our hero is Paul and his mother Jessica, and she actually is not in a scene, I still always kept like an echo of a female voice going to just maintain that. It felt like the desert to me. The book is tinged with Middle Eastern themes, but first of all, I didn't want to do that cultural imperialism where I was going to go and suddenly rip off every cliche that you find in Middle Eastern music. Nor did I want to root the thing that firmly in the Middle East. That's really not the point. The point is, it's on the planet Arrakis, set in the future. There should be just a hint, and maybe it's the Middle East, but maybe it's not. John Williams is to me, the most masterful composer we have. And one of the most masterful scores he's ever written was Star Wars. But when you're a 13-year-old and you're precocious and you're, you know, you're full of hubris and a little arrogant and you start thinking all these crazy things, you know, and I'm sitting there, I'm going, in a galaxy far, far away, why am I hearing strings? Why am I hearing French horns? Shouldn't that be completely different sounds? And truly no insult intended to the pleasure, for instance, that I got out of listening to Star Wars and how that is a perfect score for that movie. But I always, at the back of my mind, was the thought that there should be a different sound, and the only sound that should remain in our galaxy far, far away and in time and in space should be the human voice. And again, it's this idea that the woman's voice is whispering in your ear something, some secret. You'll never know what the secret is. One day I got this sort of amazing chant back from Lisa that just became like, that would be underbelly. That's Lisa Gerrard from Dead Can Dance or Lisa Gerrard from Gladiator. I try to make everything tension, basically holding your breath through this dream. And then there comes this very obvious chord that will lead you to something else. You just know it's building towards something. We're now in the meat of Dune. Now we're on a journey. I have this band of extraordinary musicians like Tina Guo and Guthrie Govan and Pedro Eustache, and they can do things that other people can't do. The duduk, ancient Armenian instrument. And I keep thinking, if it's ancient, it'll hold its value into the future. It'll be something that you can pick up in 10,000 years and it will still be relevant. So it's actually Pedro playing two different duduks, one in one key and one in another key, because the tune is just outside its range. What I like in folk music is that idea of everybody is playing the same tune at the same time, but they're all interpreting it slightly differently. Tina Guo, who is very polite, wonderful human being, and then she picks up her cello, and the way she picks up her cello, it's like a sword. It's an electric cello, so it can become anything I want it to become. The way she plays, I mean, that's not how you're supposed to play a cello. And that's what I love about it. And you got Guthrie Govan, who's one of the world's finest guitar players. And you suddenly realize, hang on a second, there is a rock band playing. For Denis and myself, it was teenagers reading this book, and we were listening to Pink Floyd, and we were listening to guitar music, and so the idea of some weird rock opera wasn't so far removed from our thoughts. Many people have tried to make this movie, and two people who have been very influential in to me in this. One was Jodorowsky.
Alejandro Jodorowsky was a visionary director who tried to make an adaptation of Dune in the mid-1970s, but the project ran way over budget and was never finished.
And of course, his idea was to hire Pink Floyd to do the music. So one of the trailers, you know, just to honor Jodorowsky and the whole thing, we actually used a clip from Dark Side of the Moon. And the other person that was important to me was Klaus Schulze, you know, who's really one of the pioneers of electronic music. And he actually wrote an album called Dune, but in another album called X, he wrote a track called Frank Herbert. So I thought it was appropriate to do a little bit of Klaus Schulze type, Pink Floyd type electronic synth sequences repeating ostinatos. We're now in the real theme for the planet. Once Paul's family arrives on the planet Dune, on Arrakis, like all noble house, you need a fanfare. You need somebody to herald the arrival. And, you know, you suddenly see a bagpiper in a shot. But the first bagpipes you hear in the movie aren't bagpipes at all. It's actually Guthrie imitating it on guitar. By the time I actually came to putting anything down, I wasn't in my studio. I was at home in COVID lockdown, so this whole score was done in my sitting room. My team turned it into a studio, and it's right next to my daughter's bedroom, so she will tell everybody that she suffers from bagpipe PTSD, because, you know, at 5:30 in the morning, and I'm still blasting away, you know, and the whole house is shaking. For Denis, there are shots in the movie that he saw when he was reading the book as a teenager. And there are sounds and gestures and ideas that I heard in my head when I was a teenager. There's a crazy drum phrase, it's called Worm Boy. It's sort of the anti-groove. If you try to dance to that, you will break your ankles. But I always had this idea that, you know, rhythm develops, rhythm moves forward. And maybe as we evolve, there are rhythms which we've never heard before that we suddenly find interesting. Quite a bit of the score is based on this really inhuman pattern of drum beats, which are, by the way, completely synthesized. There's a piece of score that Loire really grabs and, I mean, sings full out. And there's a commitment to each note, which is, I mean, it's terrifying. It takes a special human being to commit, to expose their soul that way, to be that audacious about their singing. It's the same tune as at the beginning now, but now it's the warrior princess singing it, you know, and Loire truly is, for me, the warrior woman. There's a whole dictionary that was written for this language, but of course I did what every good rock musician does. I ignored what the words mean, and I just picked the words that would sing well. The professor of linguistics who spent months and months and months writing this language is probably quietly horrified by what I did. But the point isn't that you're supposed to understand the words. You understand somebody is telling you something important. And I don't know how you feel, but I mean, when I hear Loire, you know, grab those notes and those words, I feel I'm understanding that she's telling me a story. Ha ha! This was done during COVID, and I have a fabulous photo of Laura in her clothes cupboard with all her coats hanging above her head. And she's sitting on the floor and she's got a microphone in front of her. And so this piece, which feels like it's being sung across an endless landscape of a desert, bouncing off the rocks of mountains, etc., was all done in a closet in Brooklyn. I'm a great believer in that music should always let you know that you can have an experience, but never tell you what the experience is. But it just says to you, come along, I'm going to take you on a journey, and it's going to be different. You never know anything until you play it to your partner, your director. Denis was in Montreal, I was in Los Angeles, but Denis went, that's it. That is the thing that I've been hearing in my head. We both approached the movie not with the hindsight of grown men in their middle age, not with the wisdom of time gone by and all the other stuff we've done, but somehow we had the recklessness and the sense of experimentation and the sense of fearlessness. And remember, a big message of the book is, you know, fear is the mind killer, I shall not fear. You know, this to a teenage boy was very important. So this is the score that I would have written as a 13-year-old. Yeah, I didn't fuck it up.
And now, here's Paul's dream from the Dune Sketchbook by Hans Zimmer in its entirety. To learn more, visit songexploder.net/dune. You'll find links to stream or download this track, and you can watch the trailer for the film. Song Exploder is sponsored by DistroKid. If you're an independent artist, DistroKid is a great way to get your music distributed. You get unlimited uploads, and you get to keep 100% of your royalties and earnings. There are more than a million artists, including me, who have used DistroKid to get their music into all the major streaming services: Spotify, Apple Music, TikTok, everywhere. The DistroKid app is now available on iOS and Android. Go to the app or Play Store to download it now. And for 10% off your first year's membership, go to distrokid.com/VIP/songexploder. This episode was made by me, with editing help from Craig Ely and Casey Deal, artwork by Carlos Lerma, music clearance by Kathleen Smith, and production assistance from Chloe Parker. Song Exploder is a proud member of Radiotopia from PRX, a network of independent, listener-supported, artist-owned podcasts. You can learn more about our shows at radiotopia.fm. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Rishi Hirway, and you can follow the show at Song Exploder. You can also get a Song Exploder t-shirt at songexploder.net/shirt. I'm Hrishikesh Hirway. Thanks for listening. Radiotopia.